It's a double header this week as the Clarets take on Palace and Fulham. This is the None and Never podcast. Hello and welcome to another bumper edition of the None and Never podcast. We are here talking about two games. It's that time of year, it's that time of pandemic, it's that time of season. Games are coming thick and fast. I am your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week are team members Rich and Tom. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening, Natalie. Hi.
Good evening, good evening.
Good stuff. Well, we have lots to dive in with here because we've had a double week. We've been played away at Palace, which was, of course, a phenomenal 3-0 win for the Clarets. And then last night, we drew 1-1 at home to Fulham in what was very much billed as a relegation six-pointer. I'm going to start with the Fulham game because that's kind of fresh in everybody's mind. And I think it feels like an awful lot happened in the game, I guess. But it really... I guess starting with you, Tom, it felt very much like a relegation six-pointer, didn't it, as I just said a minute ago? And it was one of those games where probably a point was going to be all right for us, but it really couldn't have been one that we lost. So I guess taking last night's draw into account, 8 points clear of the relegation zone, how are you feeling generally about survival hopes this season? Do you think we're done?
Yeah, I think I've always been pretty confident that we were going to have enough to survive. I think when you look at some of the teams down there, I think we are better than at least three of them. Obviously, last night it was a much bigger game for Fulham than it was for us because they need to put wins on the board. They've been drawing a lot of games recently, and obviously, while it's giving them points, they're not ticking close enough to the edge of the relegation zone, I wouldn't say, with those. So I think for them to have a realistic chance of Fulham is in over the last sort of 10-15 games, I think they had to beat us. And I think that we had that in our minds as well. You could sort of see the last sort of 15-20 minutes we weren't pushing on for a win a lot. We might have been, had the roles have been reversed. So I think, yeah, the result is a good one for us. It keeps that gap at 8 points. It's a big gap for a team like Fulham who haven't shown this season that they're capable of putting sort of 2-3 wins together. They picked up the odd win here and there, but I think the one on Sunday against Everton was the first for about 2 months. So the chances of them putting 3 or 4 wins together and overhauling that gap are pretty slim, in my opinion. We've got a very winnable game on Saturday. Yeah. I know Fulham have as well. But if we can win that West Brom game and put 11 points daylight between us and them, I think it's going to be really difficult for them to overhaul us. So I'm feeling very confident about our chances.
Yeah, I think I am as well. And I think, Rich, it's like Tom said, Fulham have won, what, 2 games all year? And it's like for them to suddenly find that form to be able to win, what, 4 or 5 games on the bounce and everybody else to lose around them feels just like a ridiculous feat. But I definitely agree with Tom. I think if you compare last night's Fulham result to, not the result, sorry, the performance, it definitely felt to me like we were, I don't know if nervous is the right word, but it definitely felt like we were more subdued last night. It felt like we were quite carefree and happy against Palace, but last night we were definitely like disciplined, weren't we? It was like it felt like the team must not lose.
Yeah, I think it was a tense game, and understandably so. I know there was a few different opinions on social media last night. There were some people who were really disappointed that we didn't get the win. There were some that were happy with the draw. Myself, I was happy with the draw. I think keeping that eight-point cushion was vital, and I think it was really important not to lose. But what I would say, I thought first half, I actually thought we delivered a good performance. Something that I was banging on about was, I think if you let Fulham play like Everton did, I thought Harrison Reed was very good against Everton, where he had all the time in the world. But we nullified that off Fulham. You know, we pressed highly up the pitch. And I think at the end of the day, we should have gone 1-0 up in the game. And then we conceded just such a soft goal, which I'm sure we'll analyse.
Well, let's talk about it now, Rich. Let's
go on.
Rip that Band-Aid off. Talk us through that debacle, because I know on the line, like players on the line, and just that discipline in the goal from set pieces is something that you're really, really on with, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I think what's frustrating is we've had 5 points in our last 3 games. Obviously, Palace were playing amazing, and then we've kind of conceded 2 goals, one against Brighton, one against Fulham, and both of those goals were from set pieces, and quite similar goals where we just didn't seem to pick up a man at all. So first of all, obviously, who, you know, the Fulham game's even more frustrated because they've managed to get two free headers in the box.
Mm.
And then obviously, you know, I don't want to come on here and start slagging off Brady too much because everybody knows he had an absolute shocker last night.
Oh,
yeah, I don't actually know what he was doing. It was on. I could have forgiven him a little bit more if it was on his right foot, but it was on his left foot. Just completely seemed to just switch off. So I think that's done. I think that is a frustration. Is that I watched a half an hour highlights this morning. I am on half term, so I've got a little bit more time. So you know, and when you watch the highlights back, even though I was happy with the draw, we should have won yesterday. Really,
I think
it's just. I think that's just the frustrating part. Is, you know, Fulham really offered very, very little. I thought they would have. You know, that was a game for me. They needed to win to drag us back into it.
Yeah.
And this, I don't know if they were suffering from a little bit of fatigue too. Don't forget they played on Sunday, and I think that's something And I think it's something you've got to take into account with these games. You know, I know Fulham have got a slightly bigger squad than us, but they've used the majority of the same players because the backup players, as we've seen in the Cup, are nowhere near good enough at this level. So, you know, we do forget sometimes that these professional footballers, they're human beings too.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching Dwight last night.
Tired, didn't he?
Yeah. First half, though, he was chasing everything down. He was working hard. I said that to my dad. And then second half, he looked absolutely knackered like a lot of the lads did. And it was almost like the two teams kind of saying, well, with 10, 15 minutes to go, we definitely don't want to lose. You know, we'll take the point. But yeah, I agree with what Tom was saying to sum up. I think we are safe now for the remainder of the season, especially if we, you know, get a good result against West Brom, which I'm confident of doing. Overall, I'm happy with the point.
But I think the point you made there, Rich, which is a really good one, you know, if we go back to what Tom was saying about Fulham suddenly finding this miraculous form out of nowhere and finding all of these wins when they haven't been winning to overturn that deficit. To me, the point you made about their lack of ambition last night to go and really, you know, beat us, because they had to beat us. We've seen before, and we've talked about this, when you're down at the bottom, it's not enough. If you look at Everton and you look at the Burnley games, you say, well, you can win one and you draw one. You're much better to beat us and not beat and draw against Everton because you're taking points off your relegation rivals. So if you're looking at that, Rich, and you're saying, if you can, you know, you compare Fulham's results this season and their attitude last night, I just don't see how they're going to get out of this.
That's true. And I think that's why a point was so crucial, because Fulham had a brilliant win at Everton, and I actually thought they played really, really well in that game. They can, you know, Everton's a top side, don't forget that, and they completely dominated them. If we went away to Everton and put that performance in, everybody would be ranting and raving. I know people say Fulham are this, that and the other, but I don't think they're not a great team, but they're still not a bad team. So, but let's say Fulham beat us last night. They've won two on the bounce. It's only 5 points. They've got two, you know, what looks like more winnable games coming up. You can easily get drawn back into it. You know, we've seen it in the past where teams have looked dead and buried. And, all, you know, Leicester did it not so long ago. Sunderland did it under Allardyce. Fulham have done it themselves in the past. It only takes three or four wins in a short period of time, and all of a sudden they're well back into it.
Yeah.
So I know there was a lot of people that said, you know, we should have gone for it. We should have gone for the win. But I actually think we did the sensible things. We were a bit decimated with injuries. And again, it does, at this stage, it does look highly unlikely that Fulham will get back into it. But at the end of the day, you never know. You just never know. Like, say, they won't beat us, and then they win the next two games against Sheffield United, Palace. All of a sudden, they could be within a couple of points of us. So again, I get it. They really don't look like they're going to do it at this current stage, but you do never know. So that's why it's important to keep that bit of breathing space and not get dragged into it.
Yeah. But I think that's true, Rich. But I think the one thing that we have got at the moment is that we've managed to drag a couple of other teams, and then Newcastle are down there, Brighton down there as well. When there's a relegation battle going on, what you want it to be is you want as many teams down there as humanly possible, because you want more variables. You want to make sure that other teams need to get results. And I think Newcastle will be looking over their shoulder, especially now that they've lost their key striker, who's going to be out for, what, 6 to 8 weeks. So their goals are going to dry up as well. So, there's a lot of variables now. And I think if Burnley just take care of their own business, they'll be fine. Tom, coming back to you, and we are going to be kind to Robbie Brady. I'm sorry, listeners, who wanted us to get the pitchforks out and start rallying against him, because do you know what? I'm not going to kick the guy when he's down. He had a shocking night last night, and the poor guy got brought on, helped to concede an awful goal, and then promptly got taken off again. Looked like he was going to be a red card waiting to happen. A lot of speculation on social media last night, Tom, that it's an attitude problem because his head's been turned by a possible move to Celtic, which I hadn't heard, but apparently that's a thing. You know, Rich has already talked about that weird attempted clearance on the goal, but I think just his overall play was off last night. Could it be an attitude thing? Is it just lack of match sharpness at the moment? Is it fatigue? Is it just Robbie Brady losing a little bit of his edge? Is there any explanation to it? Or actually, is there any point trying to explain it? Do we just chalk it off as one of those?
I think the big thing for Brady for the last couple of years has been lack of match sharpness, to be honest. I think since he got that injury at Leicester, he's not been the same player. He's come in, he'll play a couple of games, then he'll be out for another month. He's never had a run. I think we saw a good kind of run of form of him. He had three or four decent games earlier this season. As people who listen will know, I'm a big fan of Brady's. I'd love to see him get that kind of form back he had before he got the big injury. But I think, to be fair, the last few games he played before last night, he's not played well. He has had an emergency gap between his last performance and last night. I don't think it's necessarily an attitude problem. I think if it was an attitude problem, you'd see more of him sort of hiding, not putting in the challenges. I think his problem in some instances was he made these mistakes and he was too sort of over-eager to try and remedy them. You know, there's the foul that, you know, Rachel stood down someone's shin. Perhaps on another day that could have been a red, and obviously he was lucky not to get the second yellow for tugging his man back as well. But I don't think he hid. I think he was just... He is rusty. I think he's come back not the same player that he was before he got the big injury. And it's looking like it's going to be better for all parties if he does get that move to Celtic in the summer.
Yeah. Rich, I'm going to bring you in here as well, because I know that one of the points you wanted to talk about as well. We had a little bit of a shift around with lots of players, just which we'll come on to in a minute, just the injury problems. Great news that we had Charlie Taylor back last night, which was good because Peter's got a knock in the last game. But with Ben Mee's concussion or whatever it was, head injury from the Palace game, Kevin Long came in, and I actually thought he did a superb job last night.
Yeah, massive boost having Taylor back. I'm a massive, massive Taylor fan. I think he's what actually... one of the best left backs in the league. You know, there's not too many that are better than him, so hopefully he can have a run of games without getting another injury. Yeah, but you know, fair play to Long, and it's kind of, I was, you know, to be fair to Tom, he said he wasn't worried about it, even though Fulham didn't offer a lot last night. I actually thought he was really, really solid. You know, he looked composed on the ball, he looked calm with everything he was doing, and I think it definitely helps him having Tarki or me or one of the experienced players next to him. I just kind of just wanted to mention that really about, you know, we do worry about him and we do need another centre-half moving forward, in my opinion, even if Tarki does stay. I just thought he was composed last night and, you know, he never looked in any real danger. But like I said, I think my only worry is if we do have me and Tarki injured and we've got to play Dunn and Long. But, you know,
don't.
Yeah, don't. Jimmy, don't. But Long was good last night. I just wanted a quick mention to him. And I think he's okay stepping in for the odd game here and there because he knows the system. Dice can trust him. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, good point. It was definitely one that I wanted to talk about as well. I was really pleased with my side. Mr. Bromley is a huge fan of Kevin Long. He's just saying that, you know, he knows he has off days, but to have that guy just to commit himself to a club for 10 years without regular first team football and just be the ultimate team player, just he deserves an awful lot of respect. The only other point I wanted to mention on the, Tom, on the Fulham game was just Ashley Barnes does not know when it's time. Does he? He's just, every single time we think we're going to write him off and think he's maybe past his peak or, you know, we need to be upgrading him, he gets injured, comes back in, and he's just probably the most informed of our four strikers we've got at the moment. And last night, just the composure he got with that goal was, I thought, superb. And I wouldn't have wanted anybody else there apart from Barnes.
I thought he was a little bit lucky myself. It was superb from Rodriguez. A little turn and pirouette was really good.
was great ball in,
that first touch. I mean, he's either really bamboozled the keeper and give him the eyes, or he's had a crap touch and it's thrown the keeper off. And then he's, to be fair to him, reacted really well because he's still got a lot to do and it's on his weaker foot. So he's finished it well. But I do think he was a bit fortunate. He was classic Barnes though last night, wasn't he? He was either winning a header or falling over, and there's no in between with him. It's frustrating to watch him sometimes, but when you're doing all right in the game, or when you're not losing, it can add another layer of entertainment onto the match. Let's say what's the cheapest free kick you can possibly win today? That was all action, classic Barnes performance for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a bit difficult, really, because it's one of those where you say he does miscontrol that first touch, doesn't he? And you think, oh my God, what are you doing there? But actually, when you look at the goal and analyse it in any great depth, he needed to miscontrol it, otherwise he probably wouldn't have put it in the back of the net. But I just thought his reactions were really sharp, and that's not necessarily something we always say about Ashley Barnes, that he just reacted, his brain acted so quickly, and he was nimble on his feet, and he put it in the back of the net, and I was just really impressed with him. I thought it was a superb performance. The only other thing, I guess, to note of the Fulham game, which leads us on to just a wider discussion now, Rich. We lost JBG again. And actually, the official line, I thought Dyche was really savage last night and just substituted Brady for being a bit shit. But actually, the official line is that apparently Brady's doing his hamstring. I'm not sure whether that's a bit of PR to help him. Just to save his face, I don't know.
I don't think Brady's injured.
I don't think he's injured either. When he said, oh, yeah, he pulled his hamstring, I was like, really?
I think he'll probably let him miss this weekend to let him look like he's injured.
I was like, when he came out in the press, I was like, I don't believe.
Seeing his face on the bench, he wasn't injured.
Oh my God, did you see him? And he was like, he was fuming.
If he was injured, he'd have gone up the touchline like Goodmanson did. So yeah, exactly. He wasn't injured.
Yeah, no, he definitely wasn't. So we're going to ignore, for the purposes of this podcast, sorry, Dash, but we don't believe you. We're going to ignore any talk of Brady being injured. But again, Goodmanson, Rich, that guy cannot get a break.
Do you think Dyche ever listens to this podcast, by the way? Do you think he ever just like in his own, he's in the Ribble Valley with Ian Warren, they listen to it and think, who are these idiots not having a clue what they're going on about? It just made me think that.
In my head, I've always hoped that Dyche would just dip in and out of fan stuff and just go, yeah, I'm going to have a listen. Because he listens to podcasts, and he's done a lot of, like, he goes on a lot of the Watford podcasts from the Rookery end. He's been a guest on there about three times since he left as a manager. It's not fair.
Yeah.
We can't get him.
I think he might do when he leaves, if he never will. No, but
what are you saying, Rich? But yeah,
I think. Oh yeah, sorry, we got sidetracked there.
Does Dash ever listen? So yeah, Goodmanson, that's where we'd gone to.
I was gutted as soon as I was gutted. Obviously, I just seen him go down, and I can't say the word that I said on the on this podcast, but it sounded a lot like cluck. As soon as he went down, I was just like, oh, cluck. I couldn't believe it, because he's just been playing so well. I'm a massive Goodmanson fan. I think he's such a good footballer. I think he's an underrated player. I think people outside of Burnley don't realise how good he is. And when he's at his best, he's contributing assists, he links up with play, and he scored two goals in the last two games. And it seemed like he had an extended breakout. Dyche said he was fit, but he said he just wanted to leave him out of Premier League football, get him back right. And then I was quietly confident I was going to see him, play an extended run of games. And when he just went down, it was just because who you've got coming in is just nowhere near, up to the level. And he was obviously forming a brilliant partnership with Lowton. So yeah, it's just gutting for him. And now he's not going to be back for weeks and weeks. And even if he is come back, he's going to have those injury fears. And that's the worry, isn't it? Because you bumped Brady on last night. He's not going to play. So now you're going to have to play Brownhill. So out wide, unless he does something else. And, these injuries are just really, really difficult. I think it was, we played a game last month. I can't remember who it was against, but we seemed to have a really fully fit squad. And, we brought, I think it was the win against Villa, actually. And we brought subs off the bench.
Yeah. Our bench was good.
Yeah, and I think there was a home game against Wolves where it looked like, and we won those two games against good teams, and when it's back to square one, I think last night was a game where our two strikers absolutely worked their absolute knackers off, And I think with about 15 minutes left, it would have been great to swap the substitutes, and we didn't have that option.
Yeah.
So hope, and I think Vidra's going to be fit for this weekend. Obviously, me's going to be back, and Woodstead's close. So hopefully, we can get a few options back. But you know, it does worry me about
wide
that right
players,
hand,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it just worries me about that right hand side, because unless you know either you or Tom think anything different, it looks like we're going to Brownell out there, and it's just fitting a you know a square peg in a round hole. I think that's the saying, and not the other way around.
No, but, it is.
Yeah, that's the one. So yeah.
No, he's absolutely right, Tom. And I guess the one thing, this might be a really controversial question to be asking, and I might be getting listeners shouting at me for saying this, but there's part of me that gets really angry at the moment. And I was listening to Dyche's post-match interview this morning, and he was saying, like, this is the level of injuries that they are experiencing are unprecedented in his managerial career, and he's never seen anything like it. But every time I hear this, I kind of go, well, what do you expect when you insist on playing such a small squad? It's like we've not added to the squad, we've not added numbers, we've not got cover for what, four transfer windows now? In the summer we didn't add anybody, we've not added anybody in January, and yes, there are reasons for that, and yes, there are wider factors that we need to take into account, but ultimately, you know, it's like, well, what did you expect when you were going to operate in a pandemic world with fixtures coming thick and fast and insist on making these players play every single minute of every single game?
Well, I suppose if you were to probably ask Dyche about that, he'd say, well, this is why I wanted to keep Hendrick, this is why I wanted to keep Lennon, and this is why I probably would have preferred us to spend more than £1 million, you know, in over the last two transfer windows. And obviously we know part of that's the board's fault, part of that's the old board's fault, part of that is Dyche's fault. Who, you know, who knows how to apportion the blame? But for example, I mean, the Bournemouth game, you know, we were all annoyed that we rested players, but it seemed to pay off with the Palace performance and result. So, but then you remember that, you know, Goodmunson and McNeil had to play that game, and would he have played either of them if we had two wingers waiting in, you know, in the wings, so to speak? I doubt it. So, you know, I don't think you can really put, you know, put the blame for that at Dyche's door necessarily. I think we all know that the squad isn't as big as it should be. I think we all know that we can't, if we expect to be playing in the Premier League and picking up results, we can't be spending £1 million. And I think if you ask Dyche, then he would have preferred to be carrying a bigger squad. You could say, oh, maybe you should rotate a bit more. I think that's the reason Man City are doing so well this season, is because they've really sort of harnessed the rotation in a way that nobody else has. But by the same token, they've got, you know, unlimited transfer budget and they've got the biggest squad. So, yeah, I'm sure in an ideal world we would rotate a bit more. We certainly would have rotated more for the cup game. But you know, we've got three wingers and two of them are made of glass, and I don't think that's really Dyche's fault. I think that is the people above him that bear the ultimate responsibility for that, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. At no point was I wasn't laying that blame at Dyche's floor. I think it's, you know, Dyche was the one telling us that he's never had injuries like it. Maybe that was some kind of message to his previous board. I absolutely lay the blame on our previous board for that. It's ridiculous that he's had to operate in this one. It just annoys me that we're in this situation, that once again we're just having to operate with a ridiculous amount of injuries. And actually, there's a significant factor in that has been our own conduct, and it just really annoys me. So I think we've got to the point then, Rich, where we're feeling relatively comfortable with the league. We've talked through what we think Fulham need to do to get there. There's obviously also Newcastle and Brighton down there as well. We've very much got matters into our own hands, and beat West Brom, then we'll be in a much better stretch. Obviously, if we get beaten off West Brom, then we might have to rethink this next week. But a few games ago, we were actually on a massive high following that absolutely incredible away win at Palace, where We looked at times like Brazil. I can't remember a half like it.
Like you said, I think there's a lot of games, especially this season. I think that's the first game we've won more than a goal. So a lot of the time watching Burnley, it can be very tense, it can be very nervy. That second half in particular, obviously, once Matt Cafu scored that worldie, Loutinho. It was just that, wasn't it just great to watch?
Yeah, it was.
It's fun, you know, he's knocking the ball around well. Don't get me wrong, Palace were absolutely
dire.
Like, I mean, they couldn't have been worse. Obviously, you had Bashuayi and Benteke up front, and you know, dread to think the money that some of those players are on. But, you know, we took advantage of it. Obviously, the two early goals helped, two good goals, obviously one from a corner. And then you can play with that with a little bit more freedom. And I think I heard a stat say that's the first time we've ever won 3-0 away from home in the Premier League, doesn't surprise. Which, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And then I was trying to wrap my brain and I couldn't think of any other. Tom's put his hand up, so I'm sure he's going to ruin
my
Tom.
Watch Watford last season that I think we both went to, Rich. I'm surprised you don't remember that one. And then,
good point, Tom. I seen you, didn't I? I'm blaming the commentator.
at least somebody's done the research, that's all I can say. Yeah, West Ham as well, the one where we won 3-0 when they were all back
in. Oh, yeah, I went to that too. Well, yeah. I think I meant it was the only time we've won away in South London. So,
oh, well recovered.
That's what it was. Can you edit that one out?
I like it. We're just like, note the time on the log, Matt. We have an editing note at about 25 minutes and 57 seconds.
So going back to that, Natalie, you know, I think there's only two other times that we've won 3-0 in the Premier League. superb win.
It really was. I think let's go through each of the goals then, Tom. I think first and foremost, I was before we lost the poor guy to injury. Gudmundsson scored a cracking goal, and I kind of feel a little bit sorry for Gudmundsson that because of young Lawton taking all of the credit. His was a really, like, that turn was really impressive. I thought they'd cocked it up at first when they took that really bad touch, but for him to be able to just turn like he didn't put it in the back of the net was impressive. We don't score goals like that, aren't we? We're dull.
He took it really well. I think he was helped greatly by the defending, shall we say. I don't know what the hell them two centre-halves are doing. It's not often we get that much space in the box, and I think that was all down to the way it was defended. But no, he really, really took advantage of it. The first touch, I think, was a decent one because it took him into the space and it opened him up for the shot as well. Obviously, still had a lot to do after the first touch. And like you say, it was fantastic. Hit on the turn, no stopping that for the keeper. Brilliant. That's the advantage you get, I suppose, of playing a left foot or on the right-hand side. You can come inside and you can hit shots like that. And he has got a decent shot on him as well. He should probably score a few more for saying. But, yeah, that was the perfect start and good to have a level head so early in the game like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, for me, their intention and their positivity was there right from the beginning, even before we scored a goal. And I can't quite put my finger on it, what the difference was in their attitude against Palace than it was against Fulham, even before any goals had gone in. It felt different for some reason.
Yeah, I think probably a couple of things. I think we got the goal so early. I know, obviously, we've got to be attacking to actually get the goals, but I think the fact that it fell for us so kindly in such an early part of the game helped. I think the fact that we knew Palace had got a lot of injuries, not in the best form, we probably sensed an opportunity there that we won't always have in these Premier League away games. So I think it was important to be on the front foot for that reason. We knew with their goal scoring record, especially without Zaha, that if we could get the first goal, it was going to be big. The state of the Palace defending, I mentioned for the first goal, how cheap that was. And then I think the second as well, it's a free header in the 6-yard box that he doesn't even have to direct. So the fact that it was so easy to score these goals helped as well. And then probably the last thing I'd suggest as well that contributed towards it is a bit of a response from the Bournemouth performance. You know, we all said, after turning out that kind of a performance for a game where you've rested players for the Saturday, then you expect to play really well on the Saturday because they've had this rest. And to be fair to them, they did answer that criticism. They did answer that query. So I think they did have to come out and play well, based on the way the Bournemouth game ended. But full credit to them. He sensed some weakness. They were off on the front foot and it paid dividends.
Yeah, definitely. So come on then, Rich, I'm going to let you do it. Matt Lawton. That is stuff that, I don't know if I can say this on the pod, but that goal is things that porn videos are made of for me. I'm going to have, you can keep whatever you want. I'm just going to play that on loop for the rest of my life.
Can I just mention something else quickly to finish what Tom was saying about the difference? Palace played 4-4-2, and sometimes in games we get really outnumbered in midfield when teams play three and And I think because obviously that 4-4-2, it just gives us that timing to play. And we looked like a team who was more kind of accomplished at it. So I think that made a big difference in the game and allowed us to have more space in midfield and in the channels too. So I just wanted to raise that because I thought it was something that I just really noticed compared to some other games we play where we do get dominated in midfield. But going to that Lowton goal, obviously, you know, I think for the last, you know, for, I'm not sure, I'd say the last 12 months or so, maybe a bit longer, I think overall he's probably been back up to Bardsley. And Bardsley seems to be the go-to right back. And then, you know, he's come back in the team and he's just got better and better. And he's obviously signed this new contract and it looks like he's freed him up a little bit. And the Brighton game, he was absolutely outstanding and then he carried that on. And yeah, it was just a beautiful goal. He's obviously took the ball. You know, sometimes we've mentioned about sometimes we're too negative about passing sidewards, backwards. He's got the ball, attacked players. I think he's beat a couple of players, wrapped the ball into Jay, who's had a brilliant 1-2 with him. And then, yeah, what a wonderful finish. Obviously, you know, I've seen it in the past when Lowton scored that amazing volley for Villa. But yeah, I think on Saturday night and Sunday, I must have watched that goal 25, 30 times, just again, just on loop, on my phone. And I'd love to actually go through goals of the season of other teams, but that must be right up there. And not just the goal and kind of the goal we got against Lawton's goal and then the dummy last night from Jay. You know, again, let's say if one of the big boys did that, they'd have been purring over those goals for ages. Especially yeah. That Lawton goal, it really didn't get enough coverage that I felt it deserved. And I know the media representation of is a bigger bugbear of yours than mine, Natalie.
Definitely
but,
is.
But yeah, it was just it just kind of I'm trying to find a good word. I'm not going to try and say it because I'll end up saying it, but I think it just kind of just rounded off a really amazing team performance. And encapsulated.
Yeah, that's the right that word. Yeah, it is.
Is that the right words? Yeah, definitely. So it encapsulated the team's performance, that goal.
Well done. Yeah, I think it's funny, really, when you talk about such a sublime piece of individual skill rounding off a team performance. But I think part of that is that you had a team that was playing so well together and the team trusted a right back to have the freedom to take on two or three players and had the confidence to pass it back to him to let him have a go and he liked to volley in the back of the net. And to, you know, it's like you don't always get that. And I think that shows a lot of the team spirit that we've got in that the team, you know, you wouldn't necessarily look to somebody like Matt Lowton to say, okay, you go and have this shot. You know, we need to pass it to McNeil or we'll need to pass it to Jay or we need to find whoever's going to put it in the back of the net. But the fact that they just went, yeah, okay, go on then, you know, see what you can put in there, I think shows a really good team spirit. So, Tom, we're now finish those games. Obviously, we've got West Brom next on Saturday, which is at home and is another really, really vital game. And it's one I think I'm perhaps more nervous about the West Brom game than I was about Fulham because I think we have now got some key players out. But once we finish with the West Brom game, we've got to face Spurs, Arsenal, Everton and Southampton are our next four games, which on paper look horrific. We then get a rest where we play Newcastle, but then we're playing United, Wolves, West Ham. We've then got Fulham again, and then we've got Leeds and Sheffield United sandwiched between Liverpool. So actually, again, it's a bit of a difficult one because we are feeling relatively comfortable about survival, but we've not got that many games left towards the end of the season that you could categorise as being easy wins. So looking at the table now, we've got 27 points on the table. We ideally want to get to 40. We want to get 13 points. We usually look at it and say you very rarely go down if you've won 10 games in a season. So looking at that, you know, if we win West Brom, if we beat West Brom and then hopefully beat Newcastle, Sheffield United and Fulham again, there's enough games in there for us to get the points to survive. I'm not being paranoid here, am I?
Oh, yeah. What you've got to take into account as well is, like, I mean, most seasons it's what, like 34, 35, 36 points. You've got to look at Fulham's fixtures and say, where are they getting 18 points from? Because, like, I know they've got Sheffield United and then Palace the next two. They're quite easy games. But if you look at their running, it's not any easier than ours. I would say it's probably harder than ours. A lot of their easy games, like Brighton, they drew, West Brom, they drew, Newcastle, they drew. That have been fancy trying to get 3 points out of us, and they drew it. So I really don't think they can afford to drop any points in the next two. So I think they'll struggle to get to 35, 36 points, to be honest. Like you say, we need 3 wins. You'd fancy us to beat West Brom. And the thing about us is, and you can say the same about the other teams around us, like Newcastle, Brighton, I think this is where they're going to survive and the bottom three aren't, is that we can get these unexpected wins. We can get wins from games you don't expect. You know, we've won at Arsenal this season. We've won at Liverpool. 1-0 down at home to Villa and getting battered, and we won that game. So what I can't see, I know obviously they beat Everton the other week and Newcastle have won there as well, but I can't see Fulham pulling 3 or 4 results out like that, like we've done in the season already. So, Tottenham away, they're not playing that well. Southampton away, I think they've lost 6 on the trot in the Premier League. These are winnable games for us. So I'm not worried at all now. I think we need 3, maybe 4 wins at a push, and they're easily there for us out of those fixtures. And if it comes down to the last game of the season, you can't ask for a better one than Sheffield United, really. So
oh, God, Tom, don't jinx us.
I think we'll be well safe by then, I'm just saying, if we are coming down to the last knock-ins, I'd rather be going to Bramall Lane than to Old Trafford. So I'm not worried at all.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. It's just really difficult, isn't it? You kind of look at these things and you just think, can we really end up getting dragged into this? I guess. See, West Brom have only won 2 games all season. In some respects, you're looking at you think, well, if we only draw at home to Fulham and we get beat off West Brom, do we deserve to stay up? There is definitely one of those, isn't there, where you just kind of think, ooh, that's not great if you're not mid then. I think.
Can I just add something there?
Of course you can. Go for it.
You can lose any game of football, and it doesn't mean you're a bad team.
True.
I just sometimes if you lose a game that you think you should win, you know, and me, I've done it. I can't lie, but it's just you mentioned the comment. Yeah, but if we draw with Fulham and then we lose to West Brom, but we beat Liverpool and Arsenal away.
Yeah,
so
true.
You don't really know, like true. Fulham could have won at the week on last night because of, you know, just a lucky goal, you know, and someone not claiming it off the line and us. So, you know, who knows? We could have a player sent. I know it's unlikely. We could have a player sent off against West Brom. So if we lose, I don't think we will. I think we'll win. There's a reason West Brom are a poorer side than Fulham. That's why they're below them in the table. For me, I think West Brom will come bottom, and I think we'll just simply have too much. Too much for them. And I think as a football fan, you are always pessimistic. I think for me, the game for us to get drawn back into it was last night. And for us having that draw, I think it's a massive, massive point. And I think Dyche knew that, and that's why he didn't want to lose and we didn't go gungo in the last 15 minutes. So I think we've stabilised, and I think we can start looking up a little bit now. You know, like, you know, we're only 2 points behind Palace. We're pretty close to Wolves and Southampton. We're not even miles behind Leeds. Even though we have got a few injuries, we always do seem to come on strong this part of the season. And you mentioned there, Natalie, you know, we have got some tougher games coming up. But who thought we would have beat Aston Villa after going behind twice? Who thought we would have beat Liverpool away? You know, we always do pull out a result where people don't expect us to win. One thing that we've got, we have started, you know, we're not free-flowing, but we have started scoring more goals recently. And I'm always very, very confident that when we go ahead in a game that we're going to win, which maybe some of the other teams don't have that now, as that we have. So I just kind of just wanted to come in on that to say that, you know, if we do lose on Saturday, you know, people will. Let's not panic. That can happen in a game of football. You know, these teams, they do have good players still. You know, West Brom still have good players. You know, West Brom drew with United last weekend, who's been fantastic away from home. So they're not, you know, it's not like playing, like, you know, like some absolute dreadful team who's got no chance of beating us. They're still a Premier League team and they can cause upsets on the day. But I'm not going to panic if we lose, but I'm very, very confident that we've got that draw against Fulham that we are going to win on Saturday.
good stuff. Actually, it's really interesting you said about Southampton, because the perception is Southampton have had an incredible season. They've been
they've lost loads on a run.
They have. Well, they're only and they've got a game in hand to end up, but they're only 2 points behind us. They've only won one game more than we, and our stats are very similar. They've won 8, we've won 7. They've lost, drawn 5, we've drawn 6. They've lost 10 and we've lost 11. So that really, really close stats. And you think about it, you think, well, if you were to ask your normal pundit how Southampton's season's gone and how Burnley's season's gone, you can bet your life they'd be saying Burnley have struggled all season. They've had a poor season. Yet you speak about Southampton, you say, yeah, they're really strong. It's perceptions are unbelievable. And it just annoys me that sometimes we struggle to shake off that negative tag that we tend to get shoved at us. It's kind of annoying. Right, well, I didn't have anything else to say about... We talked about injuries, which is what I wanted to cover. I think we've covered enough in both the Palace or Fulham games. Do either of you had any sort of wider points or anything else that you wanted to cover before we called it a week for this this particular show?
Oh, good for me, good for me.
Good, good. Tom, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
Nothing springs to mind. I got to slag off Fulham with Richard on the programme, so that's all I wanted out of tonight.
Happy days, happy days. I love it.
Can we do score predictions? I do enjoy doing that.
Yes, do it. Go on. I feel like there's a positive one coming your way. Come on then, Rich.
2-0, easy. 2-0, comfortable win.
Wow. Rich?
Rodriguez and Westwood.
Wow, we've not even got score predictions. We've got scorers as well. This is impressive. Well, Tommy set the bar high. You're going to have to give us a score and scorers.
I want to know if Rich thinks it'll be left foot, right foot or header before I give mine.
Go on, Rich.
Jay Edder, McNeil crossing. Do you know where he kind of makes that run to the near post and he flicks it into the... Just a glancing header. That's what I'm saying.
Specificity has gone wild on the None and Never podcast. Go on then, Tom. You have to beat that.
I'm going to say 1-0. Josh Brownhill's drew a goal. So he'll ghost in from the right and just tuck it away a la Jeff Hendrick in the second half from the corner.
Excellent. Well, I'm gonna say 2-0 as well. I'm going to say a Barnes netbuster of a finish. And I'm going to say a Ben Mee header from a corner. There we go. We're never going to remember these, so we'll have to play this back before next week and see if any of us were anywhere near close. We love it. Listeners, if you've got some score predictions, we usually do this on the preview show, actually. Oh, actually, that reminds me, preview show. Statman Dave did tell me that I needed to say this on this podcast to do crossovers of shows. For those of you who only listen to the analysis show and don't listen to the preview show, we are doing a new feature in the second half of the season where Dave does a fixture flashback. I think that's right. I'm almost tripping over those words. And what we're looking for fans to send us some memories, ideally audio. You can just record them on the phone, drop them to us on email. Essentially, memories of the fixtures that we've got coming up. So let's say, for example, have you got a previous memory of West Brom away? Drop us a quick message or something like that, or one of the fixtures coming up. So please get involved. And also, if you don't listen to the preview show, why don't you? Download it. Listen, it's good. That is all we have time for this week. We will be back. I don't even know when the fixtures are next week. So obviously we've got a Saturday game, so I presume that the rest of the team will be back probably Monday, Tuesday next week with some analysis of that game against West Brom, unless we get beat heavily and we're all sulking, in which case we might give it a miss, but you never know. And Dave and I will be back on Friday with the preview show, giving you all the stats ahead of that game. My thanks go to Rich and Tom for joining me on the show and giving their expert opinion. It's been a very thoroughly enjoyable one this week. Thank you. To producer Matt for producing and editing all of this together. To band Joyce, who give us the background music royalty free. Thank you. And finally, to you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this podcast. Your support is very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Never podcast. Until next time.